Welcome to North Valley's devotional podcast for April 26th, 2021. Today we'll be reading from Genesis 50, verses 12 through 14. So Jacob's sons did just as their father had instructed. They took him to Canaan and buried him in Machpelah cave, the burial place Abraham had bought from Ephron the Hittite. After the funeral, Joseph, his brothers, and everyone else returned to Egypt. The end of the narrative of Jacob and his sons is complicated and long, as is Jacob's entire story. Tying up the loose ends, Jacob moves with his entire household to Egypt with the blessing of Joseph and the king of Egypt. There's a lot in these four chapters at the end of Genesis that is expositional: how Israel ends up in Egypt and how they relate to the Egyptians, where they live, and some of the cultural differences. There's also a lot of end-of-life stuff, Jacob blessing his children and so forth. To say Jacob blesses his sons is a bit of a misnomer, because not everything he says is a blessing. Some of it is curses for the actions his sons have taken, and even some of the blessings feel a bit mixed. Jacob continues to upend the tradition of giving the foremost blessing to the eldest, both by making Joseph his official heir and by choosing Joseph's younger son, Ephraim, over the eldest, Manasseh. For a story that is based around four generations of a promise to give a specific land and prosperous living there, this story ends oddly. Jacob's sons are not living in Canaan, but in Egypt during a famine. Jacob is buried on the promised land, but Joseph, despite his dying wish to his brothers, is embalmed in a coffin in Egypt. It foreshadows the coming disaster for Israel, as they not only don't leave Egypt in the near future, but are there and become slaves for the next 400 years. The storytellers end a bit ambivalently. On the one hand, it is the resolved and happy ending we would hope for. Jacob's family is reunited and safe in Egypt, provided for and at some level reconciled. On the other hand, Jacob's final words to his sons are not all words of comfort or reconciliation. After Jacob's death, the brothers need reassurance that Joseph isn't going to turn on them. The big epic buildup, the tension in the storyline, is unresolved. The legacy of Abraham remains unfulfilled. Israel is not a great nation as of yet. The promised land amounts to a field and a cemetery, and the people of this great nation are all in exile due to famine. Yet the storytellers attribute this to God's direction and providence. It's almost as if this narrative deliberately creates tension. To the end, it isn't a tale that accepts the easy way out or is willing to wrap things up in a neat package. The heroes, as we've seen, are hardly role models. The promises are vague, and when they work out, they come with hardship and unexpected twists. This chosen family is full of contradictions and conflict, and if we're completely honest, they're a bit of a mess. Often, the church has chosen to simplify or justify what clearly isn't the best of circumstances. We squirm uncomfortably when Abraham goes to sacrifice Isaac. We laugh off Jacob's mistreatment of Esau. We don't bother to read about Judah and Tamar or the brothers' response to the rape of Dinah, or take seriously the brokenness and pain of the reunion of Jacob's family in Egypt. But what we miss when we try to skim over the ugly and hard things in this story is the main point the storytellers are making. Following God is messy and hard. We're still going to make poor choices. We're still going to encounter selfishness and greed. The promises don't always just fall into place. God's faithfulness doesn't mean that everything will be easy, and we're still collaborative parties in all of that working out. Maybe more importantly still, God shows up in the mess. God doesn't walk away from Abraham and his descendants, even though God has every reason to. We're not unidimensional people, and being God's people doesn't change that. God shows up in the middle of our goodness, in the middle of our faith and trust, and in the middle of our own worst selves too. God is with us in our violence and selfishness and continues to sustain us even when we're completely out of line. Abraham and company serve occasionally as examples and more often as warnings about what it means to be in relationship with God. But as we finish reflecting on their story, we are invited to consider our own messy and complicated lives. The storytellers, writing so many years after these events, were inviting their audience to consider faithfulness, promise, and providence through the lens of these narratives. That invitation stands for us as well as those who first encountered these stories. Some questions for today. What do you make of the stories of Abraham and company? How have these stories challenged you to see God at work? How do you make sense of God's fulfillment of promise to Abraham and his descendants?